and thank you for coming. So hope I have a loud enough voice. I talk about spin liquid phase of the J1J2 AF Heisenberg model on square lattice. It's based on a tensor product state study. And here, introduce you my collaborator, Zheng Chenggu. He is a frequent visiting here. Frank Vastrat and Xiaogang Wen. Well, he's moving here. So the Hamiltonian of this model is nothing more but the nearest neighbor and the next nearest neighbor in Heisenberg interchange. And the, both of them have a positive coefficient, coupling constant. So in this case, it is a frustrated model because in the triangle, there's no way that both all three spins can satisfy each other by antiparallel to each other. And it is well known in the small J1 or large J1 limit, small J2 limit, the pure Heisenberg model, it is antiferromagnetically ordered. It is also well known that without J1, if you only have J2, you have to decouple the antiferromagnetic Heisenberg model. But tuning a little bit of J1 will make them become correlated and form into a collinear state, up and down, change at different rows, different corners. But in between, there is an intermediate phase, which people don't know exactly what the ground state is. So empirically, there should be two critical points, lower one and a higher one. People have proposed many different solutions for this intermediate phase. So let me name some examples. And in this talk, I will examine all three different Coulomb valence bound solid orders. And in the end, none of them appears or shows up persistent to the thermodynamic limit. So the Coulomb order, placate order, and the staggered staggered Coulomb staggered order. So before I go on, I would like to talk a little bit about the Z2 spin liquid, the lone Z2 spin liquid state, and the short range RVB state, resonant valence bound state. So the well-known Z2 state, Z2 spin liquid state, is toric coat, of course, by K. Taif in 2003. And next, known Z2 spin liquid are the ground state of quantum dimer model, the Rokossa-Kivisen point of quantum dimer model on triangular and Kangamain lattice. So both these two lattices, they are frustrated. And the literature here is triangular by Mosner and Sondi, Kangamei by Mingguish et al. And recently, Yao and Kivilson, they constructed a wave function or another RK point, which is a equal superposition of not only the nearest neighbor quantum dimer, but also the next nearest neighbor on bipartite lattice, such as square lattice and Hanekom lattice. And they show that that state, that RK state, is another Z2 spin liquid state for quantum dimer model. So these are quantum dimer models, and there is a very strong relation between resonating valence bound state and quantum dimer model. Quantum dimer state are at RK point. So the short range RVB state on Kangamain lattice is a Z2 spin liquid state. And it was shown in the recent paper by Paul Blanc et al. Very recently, the same group of people, Robert Schuch, he explicitly proved that there's an equivalence between the toric coat, Rokossa-Kivisen point of quantum dimer model on Kangamain lattice, and the short range RVB on Kangamain lattice. The equivalence, by, they are equivalent by an isometry transformation, which says that all these three states fall into the same category of it's basically after RG, they are the same. The injectivity of short-range RVB on Kangamanatis state that there exists a short-range parent Hamiltonian that has the RVB state as the exact ground state, which means that there indeed exists a Hamiltonian where you can have such a ground state.
So the gap in the diner set to 2?
So I, can you repeat?
Is the gap in the spin sector and the diner sector?
Yeah, they are the two spin equals. Yes.
Sorry, can you explain what is injectivity?
The injectivity in terms of tensors is that if you include more and more tensors, more and more sites, this the bound open, you can form that wave function as a matrix. That matrix is full rank. That is,
okay.
That's to my understanding the injectivity. But there's a paper about it by Norbert Chu and.
What does it mean, proof of equivalence?
Excuse me?
The last point, proof of equivalence.
Oh, okay.
So,
After several RG steps, renormalization steps, they flows to the same fixed point. Microscopically, they are not equivalent, but if you renormalize it, they become the same state, the same phase.
Yes. So in the short range resonating balance one, you have spin, right? The excitation.
Yes, that but they are gapped.
So
yeah.
Are they equivalent to the electric charges of the particle? Where did the spin go?
Electric, you mean? What do you mean, electric charge of?
In the very code, we don't have spins.
Yes.
We don't have spin one half excitation.
Mm-hmm.
In the short range resonating balance one phase, we have spin on release. Is that correct? So
yes.
This equivalence seems to indicate that the low energy description of the fluid is equivalent.
Yes.
But in one case, I think you have excitation through the spin, and in the other case, the very code, you don't have spin.
Yes.
You have all the different bad spin rates. So I don't understand what it could mean that they are equivalent at low energies.
I don't know. From the literature, I don't know. I didn't see this thing.
I mean, you argue you gotta break the valence bond to make the spin on, right? That's equivalent to the electric charge in the current
code. But the current code, you don't have the sufficient power spin.
So it's just a boson. It's a boson, right?
Sorry. The statement that is that there is a equivalence by an isoamplitude transformation is like one-to-one equivalent.
It's the C2 charge. It's the C2 charge. It's equivalent to the C2 flux of the boson. That's the magnetic charge.
I don't know.
Well, it must be because the QDN on the Aki point is an emergent.
It's U1 on square lattice, but Z2 here gap. Yeah, so now I tend to square lattice RVB state. So, and focus on, stability, which is that is there a parent Hamiltonian that has the Z2 spin equal state. And as pointed out already, RK point of quantum Dammer model on square lattice is gapless U1. Gapless spin liquid state with power law dimer correlation. So this is the early work of Rocks and Kiverson. And so these are quantum dimer model. But in terms of resonance valence bound state, it is a U1 spin liquid state. And they have been recently confirmed by Monte Carlo studies by this Andersenvik, Chris Henry, and this French group. Explicitly say that it is also a critical system and with a little different decay power. So here it has been constructed by Kano and Fantney that there's a parent Hamiltonian which has the nearest neighbor RVB state on square lattice, the exact ground state. or well, people might think that the RVB state indeed is a stable state for some realistic Hamiltonian. And the last part is very interesting and related to our work is that the equal weight superposition of nearest neighbor and the next nearest neighbor RVB on square lattice and Hankel lattice, they are Z2 spin liquid state. And in this paper, they prove it in our quantum dimmer model, but as I have seen that quantum dimmer and the RVB are very related, closely related. So it is possible to have a Z2 spin equal state as the natural ground state for realistic quantum Hamiltonian. And the collapse of these extensive topological sectors for square lattice is accompanied by frustration, which means that you need to have a next nearest neighbor RVB in order to have a Z2 fourfold degeneracy of the ground state. So here, my outline of the talk is I introduce shortly about the method, how we work on the tensor product state. And then for the result, I will go through different things to show that it is indeed a gapped spin liquid state. Here, the method. First of all, it's a tensor network state approximation of the ground state wave function. And I assume here people know a little bit about tensor network state. So here I just state quickly that we use ABCD four sublattices to accommodate possible valence bound solid orders. And we study their competing effect. We do not design a state which has a different valence bound order, but it automatically falls into that order. Then we optimize the ground state for an infinite system with cluster imaginary time evolution. So this evolution method for tensor network state was inspired by Giffer's work for the so-called ITBD method for one dimension. And these people by Jiang, they proposed, they extended to two dimension. It's called a simple update for tensor network state. And our work is also inspired by both. And we say that if you have a cluster, your system, of course, is an infinite system. But we approximate use a mean field environment to update this cluster of spins. And after the convergence, after we have the ground state tensor elements, we set these tensors on a torus, which is that it is a periodic boundary condition square lattice. Then we measure expectation values of finite size periodical boundary system with system size from 4 to 32 by variational Monte Carlo sampling method. These are reference. And then we use a finite size scaling to extrapolate to the thermodynamic limit. Yes?
So the entity you're using is the tensor network where you have four tensors.
Yeah.
So it's some unit cell, we did repeat it.
Yes.
Completely many times.
Yes, thanks.
Now,
yes.
Is that, so that's definitely a constraint that you put by hand on the wave function.
Yes.
Not just that it's a tensor network, but also that it has a unit cell.
Yes.
Are the results that you will describe robust against, so if you would consider bigger unit cells, say
yeah.
the four tensors, 16,
yeah.
do you expect the same results? Did you check whether you get the same results?
I didn't use a larger unit cell, mostly because I didn't test the larger unit cell because that's more expensive to do cluster update, or it's much more expensive to optimize many evolution or
sure.
any sorry
it's
variational parameters.
The question is whether the antenna itself is preconditioning the possible phases that you can find afterwards.
As I said, this is the smallest possible answers. For such valence bound solid order, at least from this setup, from this 2x2 unit cell, you can have all these valence bound solid that is possible. That is people are interested. So yes, one can do use not a unit cell, or can use can have different tensors on different sites, but that's more expensive. So we look at the finite size energies, as we said, set up it on a finite torus, and this is as inverse of bound dimension d, and the energies will decrease, and we use some finite descaling to figure out the finite size energy at infinite d limit. The extrapolation here for different size, we show it on this plot, and there's a known finite size scaling for the energies in the thermodynamic limit by the field theory. So here, this scaling function is exact. It is has a correction of 1 over L cube. And
if you only have these four clusters, what does L mean?
I have four, but it's repeat. It's a unit cell.
But if they're all identical, then how does it change?
It is as if you have translational environment wave function. You have a translational invariant wave function with a unit cell 2x2.
But they're all restricted to be identical.
You put it in a finite jump.
I put
number of copies of this unit cell.
Because it fluctuates, right?
They can fluctuate independently. Or learning.
Oh, yeah,
they
yeah,
are
yeah,
the same.
Yeah, they have the correlation. The body indices allow for lots of fluctuations in the wave function. No worry, this is not a crystal or. Yeah, there is plenty of room for fluctuations. But my question. So. It took me some time to understand this plot. And actually, you are not claiming that you find the ground state for different sizes
No. And
extrapolate, right? So you
no.
have one wave function
no.
you have
yes.
the ability to put, to wrap together into different sizes,
yeah.
and then extrapolate the results to the thermodynamics.
That's right.
So I'm curious about this. So the previous, the references that you mentioned there,
mm-hmm.
they use this scaling.
Yes.
Presumably, when they have the ground state
exactly.
on different systems,
yes,
systems with different sizes,
yes.
So it's interesting that you find the same type of scaling,
yes,
when you are not actually even trying to find the ground state on
yes.
different sizes.
That's right. Yeah. So my tensors are the same. They're coming from an infinite system, and but now it sounds also. Well, if I use it for finite size, it also gives pretty good state as approximation to the ground state of the finite system.
But don't you optimize the tensor for each size?
No, it's the same tensor.
So numerically, it's the same tensor.
Yes.
I see.
But that's very interesting. It should have also size effect, which means that if we optimize for a finite system size, it should even get to lower energy. But we didn't do that because that's expensive. And if we just directly plug in, it also works. Sounds working at least.
So how do you get the tensor in the first place?
Okay. First place is by imaginary time evolution. I quickly go through it. So is that you put evolution operators as this dash.
Sorry, what are those square root lambdas?
OK. Square root lambdas are the square root of the singular values when singular value decompose this sheet of sounds like a matrix product state. So when one trying to cut this and throw away some singular values, there you have a lambda indicating which part of the state is is important, and you keep the important ones throughout. It's like DMRG. So it's like the eigenvalue of the reduced density matrix from DMRG.
So by an independent method, you find the tensor.
By this method, I find a converged tensor and plug them into torus.
Mm.
Yeah.
So like, I think this is very interesting because Frank Kippenstadt,
yes.
Collaboration with some people, including me, recently we have a paper, I don't know if it's out there, we have a
yeah.
paper where we show that if you optimize in the
yeah.
infinite system,
yeah.
you should not put it in a finite geometry.
That's right.
But that's for physical systems.
Yes.
So I think that what saves the day here is that you have a very sharply correlated bias.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have that, your system becomes smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It's larger than the correlation length, expected
mm-hmm.
correlation length.
Yes.
Then it's safe to put it
on a finite, maybe.
Provided the bulk of them
yes.
are, all the system sizes are larger than the
that's right. Length. Yeah, it's a good comment.
So that would be a way to make this compatible
yes.
with another paper.
Yes. Yeah, otherwise, yeah, you would consider the correlation as compared to the system size. Yes. So then we plotted with some other differently. So here is as the coupling coefficient J2 over J1 and the energy for different size for 4, 6, 8, and 16. And then we extrapolate, we also show the extrapolated infinite thermodynamic energy. Here is a rough comparison with the ED result, exact diagonalization for 4 by 4 and 6 by 6. From here, you couldn't say that they deviate a lot. But here, we say the energy difference from the ED result. So I specifically showed L 6 by 6. And so first of all, this green is another work. So it's another variational simulation which set up the amplitude of resonating RVB state as variational parameter and optimized for the finite 6 by 6 system. And they can get, they get energy difference or energy error lies always on top, above my energies, my energy errors. So the best error is around 10 to the negative 4, and the worst one is 10 to the negative 2 for 6 by 6. And we looked at the fidelity for 4 by 4 system, because the wave function can, each of individual coefficient can be computed out explicitly. And we calculate for 4 by 4, as you increase the bound dimension, one can say that there is an increase of the fidelity, because this is 1 minus fidelity. And the worst fidelity is around 90%. And here, it is also fidelity, and the result is passed by this group of people. So the RVB, the same energy here, their fidelity is this green squares. And our fidelity for 4 by 4 lies like here. So we are pretty sure that even we optimize for infinite system size, our wave function is also quite a good approximation for finite size.
Can you do this comparison for the order parameters also? Because the energy converges usually the best, right?
Yes, I think you do. Yeah, it's a good idea. But I haven't compared order parameter. Yeah, maybe the order should, such as the AF order, have a big difference.
Absolutely. I'm trying to understand. So is this a gap phase? Is this supposed to be a gap space?
Here in finite size, no. Finite size from 0 to 0.6, there's always AF phase. No, for finite size, you never see any spin liquid.
No, but so these numbers that you have here, the error in the energy with respect to the exact solution for 36 spins, is that
yeah.
36 spins?
Yes, 6 by 6.
So you have 36 spins on a torus?
Yes.
And you look at, you have the exact solution?
Yes.
And you compare?
Yes.
And you're saying that the error, for instance, in 0.6, just looking directly at the worst part?
Yes.
Is 10 to the minus 2.
That's right, per side.
Per side. So
mm-hmm.
I have to multiply this times 36.
The, of course, yes.
So the error in the total energy?
Yeah.
It is
0.36. Yeah. 0.36 J1.
Point
is this number times 36.
Right. Okay, so one third.
That's, yeah.
And the question is there an estimate of the gap in the system at this system size?
What
so
gap? There's no gap. This AF phase.
I'm sorry?
What gap?
The gap.
It is AF phase.
So
why
I'm trying to understand whether this is a real combination of the two ground state with a lot of contamination or not. That is, if I know how much the gap is, then I, if the gap was very large, then I would know that mostly you have the gap state.
How to compute the spin gap here?
Well, any gap. So presumably if you have information about the ground state,
yes.
You also have information about the lowest energy, lowest excited states.
We only have the ground state.
I mean the exact result.
Okay, oh sure, yes.
They probably also have what the gap is to And so it would be interesting to know how the error in the energy that you have here compares with the gap.
Okay.
To understand how much contamination you may have from excited states in the wave function.
The gap is the smallest at 0.6. The gap is a little bit, I have the plot, but I didn't show it. It's a plot for 4x4. I indeed have the.
But clearly for 4x4, you're doing something very well because you have very, very large fidelity, very large overlap.
Yes. Yes. 6x6.
But you have information about 6x6, which is significantly closer to the thermodynamic. Sorry.
Yes.
Well, no, but it would show the tendency, right?
Yes.
Whether you are getting better and better as you can see a lot of systems.
I let me say one thing, but I didn't plot it here. So here we know the fidelity for 4x4. And we also know the error bar for absolute error for 4x4. Absolute error per site for 4x4 is higher than 6x6.
Okay.
So it's supposedly that the fidelity is also 90% at the worst point, at J2 equals 0.6, which means that it has a quite large. The fidelity doesn't decrease as you increase the system size because the wave function itself coming from infinite, it should, well, I don't know, I shouldn't say should, but have a tendency to decrease.
I'm not worried about how your wave function changes as you change the system size.
Yeah, that's true, because 6x6 has a smaller gap.
Right.
Yes. Thanks. So this slide, we show the AF order parameter. It's defined by, the spin-spin correlation sum over all distance. And we plot this magnetization square as inverse system size. The largest system size we approached is 32 by 32 with these points. And we extrapolate according to this function with second order of inverse length correction. So this extrapolated magnetization, we take the square root of these numbers and shows on here the magnetization magnitude. And we could say that in the thermodynamic limit at 0.5, this magnetization is very close, well, close to zero. So 0.5 is close to the critical point. And after 0.5, there is these two states, they are non-magnetic ordered. So they have no magnetic order at 0.55 and 0.6. And we say that there is a continuous phase transition at around 0.5. And it's further confirmed by a power law spin-spin correlation function. So I will show in the next page.
So in other numerical work, it starts even earlier, around 0.4.
Yeah. Yeah. So DMRG work start at 0.4.
Mm.
But this is a quasi one-dimensional result.
So it might
extend a little bit further to J2, in J2 direction. we showing the spin-spin correlation function for two different coupling constants, 0.5 and 0.55. So this is a log log plot. And this red dot, we can fit up to distance at 10. We can fit a linear line. So there is some tail because 0.5, indeed, there are some lingering of anti-ferromagnetic order. But at 0.55, it is very clearly, it is exponentially decay faster than power law. And if we plot a semi-log for the coupling constant 0.55, and we can fit a linear line and to figure out the correlation length is 3.4. So this point, I would argue it is a finite decut. We are set up a lingering of antiferromagnetic order for, or we don't quite sure the source of this this tail.
So you have error bars on there, but
error bars are smaller than that you can see.
Those are
very, yes. Yes.
But it's a bit obvious that you have the two sides, right?
Yes.
So 16 sides is halfway.
Yes.
So you would expect the correlation to start recovering, but it has to connect and go out again.
Yes.
So it's entitled to see some form of recovery.
Maybe, but this is funny.
Are you thinking about the log? There should be some kind of hyperbolic cosine, right? To recover on the
yeah.
side.
Yeah, that's right. Or because of the periodical boundary condition, it should also curve up a little bit. So at the critical fitting, we have this alpha is 1.34. And the deconfined quantum critical point, if you have this 1 plus eta by Anders, they have 1.27. So it's quite, it has a quite large eta exponent, so the correction of the correlation exponent. And for the spin liquid phase, we have correlation three spin distance away.
Sorry, what did you hear that to? The
eta, I mean,
from the deconfined quantum critical.
Yeah.
So it should be 2 classically, this one? If for
classical, eta should be, for classical, should be very small.
Oh, so for classical, all 3 or something is like 0.
Yeah.
That's the anomalous
dimension. Yeah. Yeah, but also because this is a little bit above the critical point, smaller than the critical point. Yeah. But we don't. So here, dimer-dimer correlation well is very noisy, I would say. And we fit it with a semi-log plot. The correlation length is also a little bit too small for the dimer. And we're trying to figure out why is that. And also because it is somehow very hard to converge the dimer-dimer correlation function. So yeah, that's the dimer. We are testing it with other methods. And so next, we looked at Weissbund solid orders. First of all, let's define some Coulomb order parameter, m squared in x direction. So it's the dimer is defined as a spin, and the next one, and here, so this captures such order in the system. And we could say that this Coulomb dimer order decays as 1 over L squared, approximately 1 over L squared, because the system size is somehow is still has some finite size effect that you cannot see clearly 1 over L squared decaying of the magnetic of the Coulomb order parameter. And this is the same for y direction. And these two figures seem very similar, so that there's no breaking of this Z4 symmetry, such as what happens in the deconfined quantum critical point. So both Coulomb orders in x and y direction scales to 0 in the limit, the thermodynamic limit. And then we looked at staggered magnetization square. So with the sign here is x minus xy plus y minus y. And both of them decays faster than 1 over L square. So it's like 1 over L cube. And also this Coulomb order, a plaquette order parameter, it also decays in a faster way than Coulomb Weissbund solid. So none of the orders persist in the thermodynamic limit. So we claim that we have seen no features of any order. And So we're also trying to calculate the topological entanglement entropy. The definition of a Renyi entropy is this, and the error law says that the Renyi entropy should have a linear dependence over cat plus some topological constant. And this is called the topological entropy. So we use this sampling of the swapper operator proposed by the Roger and Hastings. And these are, I just listed that. So let me say a little bit about this plot. This S of 2, you need to calculate, expect, or trying to evaluate the row of square. And these two rows, they form a reduced density matrix for beta spins. And that two rows form the reduced density matrix for the same beta spins. Now, row 2 is formed in such a way that you can do Monte Carlo sampling over the physical degrees of freedom that is indicated by dash lines here. And every time, so we sample with the importance weight W square, and the swap operator is expressed as the ratio of, as if you change the spins from red to blue here and change the spins from blue to red. So you swap these two spins and evaluate the ratio. And the average of it will give you entanglement entropy. Of course, here we use the improved estimator, which means that you have to calculate by increasing a column of spins, not calculate at once. And let's see our result. We have two setups. One setup is for torus of 2 L by L, and we take the entanglement entropy of half of this torus, which is a cylinder of L by L. And we have three different system sizes, L equals 4, 8, and 16. And one extrapolate them with a linear line to obtain the topological entanglement entropy at these two different points. We say the extrapolation for 0.55 is around 1.3, and for 0.5 here, supposedly it should be a Goldstone, half Goldstone corrections for this coefficient, for the constant term. And we have another setup is that take a disk of L by L from a 16 by 16 system, and we increase L. We could also say, we could also try to fit a linear line, but here, this disk of L by L has four corners, so we cannot separate the topological entropy from entropy introduced by a corner, and we have such extrapolation of the constant. The system size certainly is not very very large, but it's very hard. So this is as dimer-dimer correlation is very hard to converge. It's up to further check with other methods such as double tensor calculation. So in the last page, yes.
So is there any reason why you only consider the first plot for L equal to 4, 8, and 16?
Yes.
Is there any fundamental reason for that, or could you consider
integral values? I can consider other L's, but this is a quite different shape in terms of TRG renormalization algorithm. If I use L's other than 2 to the power of n, I need to somehow, yeah.
Right. Well, that was surprising is that it seems you just assume that we have 2 full L times L.
Yes.
So that when you cut half of it, you end up in L times L. But actually, you only care about one of the 2 L's. Right?
Yes.
You don't need to scale the system in the other direction.
I need, because there are corrections to it. I need to scale the system in the other direction, because it scales, it changes if you, there is a shape dependence, so it will change as you increase. You have two boundaries, but the width of this region also matters.
What? But
you cut a torus.
I'm assuming from the start that the sizes you consider are larger than the correlation length of the system.
Yes.
For all these like
yes.
Makes sense.
It's not about correlations. I don't know what is the deep reason, but if you have a torus and cut it into two, you have two cylinder. The width, the length of the cylinder also matter.
But if you should not.
If in terms of, well, in the L infinite limit, it should not matter because it already saturated. But for such small L, such as 4, it matters.
Okay.
That, yeah.
But, okay, so I thought that the spirit of all these topological contributions to the entanglement entropy
mm-hmm.
were that you had to be in regions that were significantly larger than the correlation line.
That's right, yes.
And if that was the case, then it wouldn't matter.
No,
then,
that's right. Yeah. But because we're using small system size, so we have to
okay.
consider that you have a larger, you have
and
at least.
As you see, already spin line.
Yes, yes.
So this bottom plot is the subsystem with corners in this one?
Which one?
The bottom plot?
Yes, with corners.
And so 0.5 is at this deconfined quantum critical point?
Not deconfined. Here's
that's
no deconfined.
Point, right?
Yeah, it's a critical point.
So that one should have a log correction.
Yeah, I see.
This week.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I need to test it for larger L.
And Senthil has a prediction. If it's fractionalized, then there's an additional constant that Senthil and Brian Swingle can calculate.
Additional from what?
Like area law plus log term plus a constant.
Okay.
It's in this paper by Brian and Senthil just recently a few months ago. So then you can compare your extrapolating constant.
So first of all, this fading is linear without even considering your Goldstone mode correction
yeah.
of log error, and the point are so few. I don't know if I can extrapolate even to the correct log scaling, plus log error scaling.
So in all these plots, the statistical error is smaller than the size of.
It's showing on the plot. So here, should.
Right. And why is this not? I mean, is there any other source of error? For instance, your evaluation is not just statistical, but you have this big hat somewhere. Is that what potential affecting this?
Decat, of course, will reshape a little bit the distribution of this wave function. But I don't think that will affect much of the result.
So if we look at this, there is this funny shape going on.
I think that that funny shape tail is not a reason of decat. It's this funny shape is a reason of decat.
But the one in the entropy, I meant the one in the entropy that you don't. So once you eliminate just the statistical error, it's smaller than the.
Statistical error is smaller than. That
so
can
how
be.
Do we want to interpret the fact that this line is not straight, or that you don't get?
Because the small system size is very hard to nice on the correct thermodynamic scaling. It's the system
so
size starts from.
Finite size effect. Finite size.
Yeah. Because the fitting does not even include this point, this smaller one. Yeah, it's also very hard to converge because I use the master-slave parallelization, so.
But my question is more, do I have to try to interpret the deviation from a straight line?
Yes.
As finite size effects or?
Finite size effect.
Not as.
Errors
in some part of the computation.
Not the systematical error, but finite size. And so one last proof is that we calculate the singular value decomposition spectra. So let me say a little bit about this RG scheme. And each of the vertices where you have a spin, you have a tensor to describe the local wave function. And this tensor, first of all, if we do not sum over the virtual bound, we sum over spin degrees of freedom, we build a double tensor of that site. This double tensor, if you decompose using singular value decomposition, you can decompose either this and that direction. In this step, this is the RG step, and the fall of these tensors form into a coarse-grained tensor. such that at originally you have 16 sites. After one RG step, you have 8 sites, and the other RG step give you four coarse grain sites. So this singular value decomposition of this uniform tensor give you also very important information about your system is gapped or has degeneracy. So it is, this SVD is some sort of the transfer matrix for a 2D system. Or this double tensor. And we looked at the SVD spectrum after convergence, after they flow to the fixed point. So here I have different examples. So first of all, nearest neighbor RVB is red point. And we know that it's U1 gapless spin liquid state. And if we look at the singular value spectrum, it has four degenerate, almost degenerate, largest singular values, which means that the system is gapless. And this four degeneracies are some reason of symmetry. So we see four of them. This is a signature of gapless. And for the next nearest neighbor, or we could say triangular RVB state, and we can say that there are two degenerate leading singular values. This means that the system is twofold degenerate. So for the Kangamei RVB state, it is proven by Norbert, Shu, and it is a Z2 spin equal state. However, we didn't see the twofold degeneracy in the singular value spectrum. It means that the singular value, the twofold degeneracy is not a necessary condition or not a necessary signature for you to see the Z2 signature, Z2 state. So even here we know it's Z2, but you don't see the degeneracy. You have only one leading singular value. And these are the results. So the next 2 points are results at my J2 equals 0.55 and 0.6. And we say that there's indeed only one leading singular value. And the rest of them, they are lying about 0.5. And so this is a signature, says that it's not a gapless spin equal. If it is a gapless, it should have degenerate singular value spectrum. But we didn't see it, so it's gapped. Yes.
If you consider just the Ising model.
Yeah. Okay.
So for the Ising model in the signature ranking phase.
Yeah.
If you consider a linear combination of the two phases, spin up and spin up,
yeah,
you would also have degeneracy.
Yeah.
So how do you know that this is not a signature ranking phase? I
mean, that's a good question. And
or what do you mean by it's sufficient to see the degeneracy to have situation?
If you say you have really specially tensor that only have equal superposition of up and down, that's true. It's but that state is not naturally, I mean, it's a
do not show up as a result of an optimization.
Yes.
Because the optimization would
it will always fall into either of the.
Okay, thanks. Yes.
Yeah. But maybe the sufficient is not quite a correct word to use here. But I mean, if you say.
But
naturally,
the result of an optimization, if there was simply ranking, you would have a tensor corresponding to one of
that's
the
right,
samples.
Yeah, yes. Because,
right, okay.
Yeah. Yes. So here, although we didn't say twofold the degeneracy of the singular value spectrum, but it doesn't mean it is not the two spin equal state. Yes, I think that's all the proof.
This is about the optimized tensor, not with respect to finite sense calculation.
It is optimized tensor, and
because there is no length appearing here in this discussion. No size,
but the size is supposed in the thermodynamic limit, so that you RG many, many times until they flow to the fixed point. And if you examine the fixed point tensor, the singular value decomposition, you have these singular values.
And because it's also related to the question I had before.
Yeah.
Are you using the fixed point tensor in your
fixed point tensor? is by you.
Calculations.
Yeah.
The finite
fixed point tensor. Well, I use the tensor, but that tensor is not the fixed point tensor. It's a tensor for a local spin. And you have to RG, co-screening it with TRG approach. Co-screen it 40 times, 100 times, and then you have a fixed point tensor, which is different.
So it's a separate.
It's a separate tensor. It's a different from your tensor describe a thing, a local spin.
But then when you calculated the optimized tensor,
yeah.
The beginning.
Yeah.
Won't it already give you some idea about energies? Where do you come back to small system? I have a basic question. No,
yeah.
If you go back to your second slide.
Yes.
You said you got an optimized tensor.
Yeah. Here.
Next. Yeah. That's for an infinite system.
Yes.
Then already you have solved the problem, right? Because you can evaluate everything there by Monte Carlo.
But extracting. So they have a wave function for an infinite system, but they cannot.
So it's a technical problem.
Sorry?
So it's a technical problem of
yes.
Evaluating expectation values in infinite system.
Right. So the technique they use is they take this wave function and they put it in different finite geometries.
Right. But then how do they get the wave function in the first place?
It's in an infinite. Oh, right.
That's another story, is it?
Yes, it's another story, yes, with these references. I guess people are not interested about techniques, so I didn't put many words on it.
It will definitely not clarify the physics. She was in the
yeah. I only have conclusion now. Yeah, I would say thank you for your attention.
So is there a particular reason you choose to approach this quantum critical transition from dominant J1 side, right? Because
from which side?
Well, J1 is much larger than J2, right? So you approach it from?
I don't approach from any point. It's optimized individually for different J2.
But when you measure the other parameter, you only measure the, the one J1 is much larger than J2.
When I measure all the parameters.
Because you show the diagram showing, J1.
Which one?
So there have been two standard, two long-range order parameters, right?
Which two?
Two nail order parameters.
Okay,
right?
Yes. Yeah, okay,
the
yes.
Other is, I think you only show one of them.
I didn't show any of them. Well, yes, I show only anti-ferromagnetic. The other side, I didn't show any result for J2 larger than 0.6.
So
for J2,
is there a particular reason why
It is there is a particular reason, because our tensor geometry set up that bound connected to the nearest neighbor site. If you have a stronger J2, this geometry is not does not prefer that you have diagonal stronger than the nearest neighbor.
So it's coming from your tensor setup?
It's from the setup of the wave function. Yeah. one could simulate larger J2.
But the MRT result showed the phase transition goes away at 0.6, right?
Yes.
It's quite close to your space bound, so it's sort of you want to have the other side change.
Yeah, I should have J2 greater than 0.6 also. But J2 equals 0.6 is in the spin liquid phase. As DMRG shows, the transition happens very close to 0.6, but like 0.612 something. Yeah, it's very sharp, like first order.
So I was trying to understand what to make of precisely these two plots on the left. We want to be able to say that there is that the order parameter goes to zero.
Yes.
But this is, goes to negative values, right? If you look at the plot.
Excuse me?
But the extrapolation seems to go to negative values, which is OK. So
Not OK.
What we say is that it's compatible with a very small value.
Yeah, very small value, but it says that you need to go even larger, and the fitting function should not be one rail square. This is these
so,
system sets are not approaching the thermodynamic limit.
So unfortunately, Ander Sambrick is not here until next week. But
yeah.
If he was here, he would say,
you shouldn't have negative M square. That's right.
100%.
You shouldn't have negative M square. So the extrapolation shouldn't go to negative value.
To negative values. Mm-hmm. But he would also say that he has all these JQ models.
Yeah, because he took
like
smaller
this,
system.
That they look like this for these system sizes. And if you go to bigger system sizes, they change behavior.
That's what he says in his
yeah,
paper.
So some VDS phases you can see a crossover from a finite size crossover where you have two fitting functions.
If you fit with small size, you get to a different conclusion.
So
if you fit with large enough system size, then
so what would you say to this type? Brutal attacks.
I should go larger, yeah, of course, yes.
No,
I should.
But you would show the entropy, the topological entropy, I guess.
Yeah.
Which
of course, yes, there are other different signs. So one sign is that I calculate the Dimer-Dimer correlation. And we say that Dimer-Dimer correlation, if it is a power law decay, that's a sign that it will go to zero. It will vanish if it is a power law decay for the Dimer-Dimer correlation function. It's a compensate proof that it is not a valence bound solid. Oh, sorry, valence bound solid also has an exponential decay, sorry.
What I would say about the whole study is that you are assuming that there is a small correlation length.
Yes.
This is why you managed to put to take. Well, your results seem to be compatible with the small correlation length.
Yes.
And I guess that the examples that Anna refers to are cases where this doesn't happen. You see, there are more than one.
Yeah.
There are different competing length scales.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Not assuming, but it's coming out from the result. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
In the classical version of that J1, J2
yeah.
model, at G2 over J1 equals 1/2 is
yeah.
a vicious point, right?
It's a critical first
this
order.
This is a phase transition, I think, at chronic temperature as
yeah.
you go down to
yeah.
a hidden eigenvariable.
Yes.
It's a strong major order, right?
Yes.
Because I guess it's a remnant of the collinearity that
yeah.
exists between the nail vector on the large G2 side.
Yeah.
So my question is there any remnant of that order that exists at the quantum case? Because you only look here at the bilinear operators in terms of the spin. So the sizing variable is higher powers of that spin operator. Have you looked at that or?
The kinetic.
Well, it's not chirality here, it's more like a
force spin.
It's like a projection on some kind of spin nematic order phase. But
I don't have clue, actually.
But
I
know the work you know the work I've talked about for the classical case, right?
Yeah.
So the classical case, you might think, like, this is a two-dimensional classical Heisenberg model at finite
yeah.
temperature.
Yeah.
There's no way you have a finite phase transition because of the Mervyn-Binder-Hohenberg theorem.
Mm-hmm.
But there is one in a composite variable that creates a discrete symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, what happens to that discrete variable in the quantum case?
I actually don't know about this.
Okay.
Yeah. So sorry. Yeah. Thanks for pointing out. Maybe I should know more reference about it.
More questions? That's fine for you again.